Welcome to episode 25B of the Fredcast for Thursday, July the 20th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. I am still on that business trip, and although the noise problems are fixed, the internet problems are not. So this is going to be another short version of the Fredcast. Be back next week with a full show. In the meantime, I do want to bring you up to date on what's going on in the Tour de France, give you a little bit of information about the tour that everybody's asking me about, do a little bit of bents on the Fredcast, and a little bit more, and then I'll be back next week. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes an abbreviated version of the Fredcast. Well, welcome back. Now, when I recorded episode 25A of the Fredcast, I mentioned that I thought that Floyd Landis had the best chance of winning the Tour this year, and that the Alpe d'Huez was going to be the critical stage of this year's Tour. I was wrong. The critical stage of this year's Tour may not yet have even occurred, although each of the three stages that have taken place so far this week seemed, well, at least for 24 hours each, to be the critical stage. So let's look at each stage and see what happened. But first, a warning. This week's Tour de France has been a roller coaster ride for the race leaders and for the fans. So strap in tight and please keep your arms and hands inside the podcast at all times. Here we go. Stage 15 took place on Tuesday. The 187-kilometer stage began in Gap and included two beyond-category climbs, one right in the middle of the stage, and then the Alpe d'Huez right at the end, and between those two was a second-category climb just for good measure. By the end of the day, Frank Schleck from Luxembourg had taken the stage, but Floyd Landis had regained the leader's yellow jersey when he crossed the line in fourth place and picked up enough time bonuses to overtake Oscar Pereiro for the race lead by just 10 seconds. By the end of the stage, the talk became louder and louder, saying that Floyd Landis had the best chance of winning this year's Tour. And then came Stage 16. Stage 16 on Wednesday was another grueling day in the Alps. This 182-kilometer stage featured two beyond-category climbs, followed by a second-category climb, and then ending with a first-category climb. Many analysts said that this was the toughest stage so far in this year's Tour, and from the results, it looks like they may have been right. It was a fantastic day for Denmark's Michael Rasmussen of the Rabobank team. He won all four climbs in intense heat, and took over the lead in the hunt for the polka dot jersey of the King of the Mountains, not to mention taking the stage victory. But the story that everyone was talking about at the end of the day was the one about Floyd Landis and how he had lost the Tour on this stage. Floyd simply could not keep up with the blistering pace set by Carlos Sastre, the second place finisher in the stage behind Rasmussen, whose dramatic attack on the final climb caught Floyd without any Phonak teammates for assistance and made him look like he was moving backwards while Sastre just climbed that hill like a goat. It was amazing. Now, Floyd came in more than 10 minutes behind Rasmussen and found himself all of a sudden in 11th place in the overall general classification, more than 8 minutes behind the new race leader, Oscar Pereiro. At this point, even Floyd himself was admitting that his performance in Stage 16 likely cost him this year's Tour. Now, at this point, it seemed to many as if the roller coaster ride was all but over, and that the car was finally headed back into the station. But this roller coaster, like all good roller coasters, had more thrills up ahead in today's Stage 17. Now, with all commentators, including Floyd Landis, admitting that it would take a miracle for Floyd to get anywhere near the podium in Paris, it seemed this morning as if his race was over. But Floyd Landis still had more tricks up his sleeve. Today, Stage 17 was a 200-kilometer event with two Category 1s, a Category 2, a Category 3, and a Beyond Category climb. Now, if some of this category information is confusing you, go back two shows in the Fredcast where I talk about how they categorize these climbs. Bottom line is, the lower the number, Category 1, the harder the climb. And when you get into a Beyond Category climb, now you're talking about a climb that is extremely difficult, hard for mere mortals to even consider pedaling up. By the 130-kilometer mark in today's stage, Floyd attacked. And by the time he had climbed the final summit of the Beyond Category Col de Juplan, Floyd had a 5-minute lead over Carlos Sastre, and was finally able to win a stage of the Tour de France over 7 minutes ahead of Oscar Pereiro. Now, you remember yesterday, he was 8 minutes back in the general classification. So with the time bonuses won by Sastre and Landis today, Pereiro is holding on to the yellow jersey by a very thin margin. Floyd told interviewers, he said, quote, "I've come here to win the Tour, and I'm not done fighting yet. It doesn't look so bad for me at the moment, and I'm confident in my time trialing." Now, what he's talking about is the time trial that's coming up later in the week. And if Floyd does well in that time trial, there is a very, very good chance that he still could win the Tour. So a Tour that so far, well, at least as it began, looked like it was going to be very lackluster. There wasn't going to be any excitement to it. All of a sudden, with all these changes in yellow jerseys, with all these ups and downs that are going on, remember this roller coaster I've been talking about, it really looks like this is turning into a very exciting and very suspenseful Tour de France. It is, I'm personally on the edge of my seat. I'm really looking forward to what's going to happen over the next few days. Said Floyd, "I want to win the Tour. If I had a bad day, I had to make up for it. Whoever wants to win this race has to earn it." So after stage 17, Oscar Pereiro is in first place in the general classification. Carlos Sastre from Spain in CSC is 12 seconds back in second place. And there's Floyd in third from Phonak, 30 seconds back. Beyond that, the general classification looks very similar to the way it's looked over the last few days. The nearest rider is Andreas Klöden from Germany and the T-Mobile team, and he's 2 minutes and 29 seconds back. So it looks like we're coming down to, I mean, I hate to give a prediction. I've given so many so far, and they've been wrong. But it looks like Pereiro, Sastre, or Landis are the best positioned to win this year's Tour. And I don't think, based on the reporting that I've done so far, I don't think it's any secret that at this point, I'm hoping that Floyd is able to do it. So we'll see what happens over the next couple of days. And when the Fredcast comes back with its next full show next week, we're going to have results and a little bit of commentary on exactly what happened in this year's Tour de France. So stay tuned for that. Now, normally I'd be giving you a lot of other news, but because of the fact that I've got a slow internet connection, it's going to take forever just for me to upload this show. So we're going to skip this week's news. I'll bring you sort of an expanded news next week. I wanted to comment on a question that I've been getting a lot in my email, and everybody's watching the Tour all around the world, and I'm getting a lot of questions about what is up with the lion. Why is it that at the end of the stage, when the yellow jersey leader goes up to the podium and kisses the two podium girls, what's up with the lion? Why does he get the lion? Well, it's very, very simple. If you look at the yellow jersey, you see that it's sponsored by a company, a bank, in France called Credit Lyonnais, and the lion is on the logo for Credit Lyonnais, and so every stage leader gets a bouquet of flowers and a lion signifying the sponsor of the yellow jersey, Credit Lyonnais. Pretty simple explanation, isn't it? All right, I didn't want this week to go by without you bent riders getting your fix of Rick's Bents on the Fredcast. So, Rick, take it away.
Thanks, David. I'm going to begin featuring some conversion stories shortly from other bent riders in future segments. All of these folks used to ride regular road bikes, so they know where they're coming from. Some will have switched because of age or health reasons. Some are attracted to the engineering side of cycling reimagined. And some are probably just nuts. But just so each one of you will know what you're getting into if you decide to try a bent, here's this week's segment, which I'm calling Everything Changes. Let's go from top to bottom. Helmet. Right now, they're the same for all bikes, but theoretically, it would be advantageous to create helmets that minimize wind resistance based on your angle of attack. On a bent, you're facing the wind or leaning back out of it as opposed to looking down much of the time. So far, there's been no supplier of bent helmets, though. Your helmet is also more likely to sport a third eye style mirror. There are a few options for mounting mirrors on underseat steering recumbent bikes, and also some constraints on the long wheelbase models. And older riders who often ride recumbents may need bifocals, which limit the placement of mirror and computers to certain distances. Glasses. Long-distance bent riders need full wraparound UV protection. One eye doctor says that you can sunburn your eye because of the leakage of common sunglasses around the sides, and the problem may be worse on bents, I think because, again, of the angle of attack. And decent bike sunglasses don't come with bifocal prescription, so you may need to combine contacts, prescription inserts, and carry two pair of glasses, one for riding, one for changing flats. Jersey. Your fashion choices will go out the window. Bent jerseys need to have the pockets on the sides, not the back. The seams will cut into your back if the pockets are back there. Because it's pressed up against the seat, you form a piston between the cranks and the seat. Pockets in front could work on some bents, but not on the aggressive models. Your legs would be running up against the pockets. The same thing applies for rain gear, jackets, and so on. There are two or three bent jersey suppliers in the U.S. and a couple more who make shorts. Gloves. These are optional. There's no pressure on your hands on most bents. It's all on your reclined torso. But I do recommend gloves for crash and sun protection, and also to give you a better grip during rainy or hot conditions. But you don't need hot, heavy gloves or thick padding or gel, which brings us to the best part. Shorts. No chamois. I laugh at charity rides when the goodie bag comes around and it contains butt paste. It's insane that I'd have to grease myself just to ride. So when it comes to bike shorts, the main thing are no seams or pockets in the back, pocket and leg closures so that they'll be secure, and breathable fabric. It might be a compelling reason to switch right here. No ED-related complaints. The closures are important because when you're laid on your back, your keys and wallet will fall out. I know. And your legs aimed into the slipstream can balloon open, advertising your good health and scaring small animals along your line of flight. Only a couple of manufacturers make good bent riding shorts, but there are canoe shorts available that work just as well and are cheaper. Socks. This is the only area where I can't see any difference. Shoes. The high angle cranks on high performance bents can create hot spots unless your shoes fit very snugly and have very rigid soles. The only major fatigue I've had when riding a bent was after 10 hours of bent riding with cheap road shoes. My feet were killing me. Go with a good shoe with a carbon or other strong last. Pedals. I recommend you look for a high degree of float and non-centering action on your pedals. You won't find this in the SPD type of pedal. Two brands offer this, Speedplay and Bebop. The Speedplay Frogs offer less float but allow you to walk off the bike. Bebops, B-E-E-B-O-P-S, are truly weird pedals. They offer 20 degrees of non-centering float, have a fun website, but they may try to kill you off the bike or it stops because they have a huge slippery surface area. I use Bebops myself. We'll cover hydration and related options in our segment on bike seats. So there you have it, how everything changes if you make the crossover to laid-back riding, though I'm sure you can find a Fred to take the old stuff off your hands. I'd like to solicit 250-word conversion stories. They can be mailed to me at bentsonthefredcast@mail.com. That's bentsonthefredcast@mail.com. Our website of the week is www.calhouncycle.com, which is a popular U.S. store for recumbent bikes and accessories, including clothing. Next week, underseat and overseat steering. David?
Thanks, Rick, for another great segment on recumbents. I'm really looking forward to hearing all of the listeners who are going to fill you in on their conversion stories or why they changed from being roadies to recumbent riders. So those of you out there that have made the switch, please do send your email to Rick, and you'll find his email address in the show notes. Well, last week, I found myself being in a rather unique position for me. I was being interviewed by another podcast. I was contacted by Daryl, who's the producer of the Michigan Cycling Podcast. And for those of you who are in the Michigan area and you want to learn more about what's going on in Michigan cycling and you want to learn about what events are coming up in your region, go to www.michcycling.com, that's michcycling.com, and subscribe to the podcast. Daryl puts on a great podcast for regional cyclists, and he interviewed me about not only about the Fredcast, but also about preparing for a century and whether this late in the season it's still possible to get yourself ready for a century. So I recommend that you go there and at least listen to the interview, and I think you'll like the show and stay subscribed to it. It's a very, very good show. But after our interview, Daryl sent me in an audio comment that he wanted me to share with the rest of the listeners because there's some legislation going on in Michigan that he thinks all Michigan cyclists should be aware of. So here are Daryl's comments. Give a listen and go subscribe to the Michigan Cycling Podcast.
Hey, David. I wanted to take a moment to share some important information for the Michigan cyclists with your Fredcast listeners. As listeners of the Michigan Cycling Podcast are aware, there are a couple bills before the state legislature of significance to cyclists and motorists alike. We need Michigan residents to contact their representative and voice their support for bills SB 1224 and SB 1225. Please listen to episode 2006.19 of the Michigan Cycling Podcast for information about these and other legislative issues facing cyclists in the Great Lakes State. You can find the Michigan Cycling Podcast at www.michcycling.com or in your favorite podcast directory. Thanks for giving me a few moments of your time, and thanks to David for a great interview for this week's show.
And once again, the link for that is www.michcycling.com. Okay, I also wanted to thank listener Daniel, who's in Perth, Australia, for sending me a link to the SRM website. Now, as you may know, SRM makes power meters for cyclists, and a lot of the riders in this year's Tour de France are wearing those power meters. So beyond what I told you about last week, which was the ability to track the riders in Google Earth, you can now also get the telemetry data that SRM is giving out on the internet. So for instance, if you've got a favorite rider and he's wearing an SRM power meter and heart rate monitor, you're going to be able to see that telemetry live on your computer as it's happening. So head on over to www.srm.de where you can find that. So I can imagine you could have that window open on your computer. You could have your Google Earth open on your computer while you're watching the coverage on TV. It's going to be like being in mission control in NASA. So enjoy that. Thanks again to listener Daniel in Perth for that. And finally, I just want to talk about one upcoming event. I've talked about it before. I've talked about it several times, I think, but it's coming up very, very soon in the next couple of days, and that's RAGBRAI, the Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa. That's at www.ragbrai.com, and this is one of the great multi-day events that goes on around the United States. I have a friend who did RAGBRAI a couple of years ago, and he can't stop talking about it. Every time we ride, he has another RAGBRAI story that he hasn't shared with me yet. So if you're in or near the Iowa area or you want to do a multi-day event, this is a fantastic one. RAGBRAI, www.ragbrai.com. And that's going to do it for show 25B for this week. Sorry for the two short shows this week. We'll be back with a longer show next week. You know that you can contact me via email. You can contact me via audio mail. You can put audio comments in by going to my website, clicking the appropriate link, and using the audio. There's a lot of different ways to contact the Fredcast. All of them are found in the show notes. Probably the easiest is just using the email at thefredcast@gmail.com or using the listener hotline at 206-203-FRED. And before we close the show out, little PodSafe cycling music, something we do at the end of every show. Tonight's music is by an artist that I have played on the show before, but I enjoy his music, so I'm going to do it again. This one's called Crow Jam by Charlie Crow. It comes to us, as always, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Links in the show notes to all the information to find Charlie and his website. So that's going to do it for this week. Be back next week with another show. In the meantime, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.